Welcome, everyone. It's Tammy Mastroberti, founder of Elevated Existence and publisher and editorial director of the award-winning Elevated Existence magazine. Today, I'm excited for this interview. I want to start off by asking you, is anybody out there feeling stuck in some area of your life or somewhere on your spiritual path? Are you someone who is living your purpose? Or are you still trying to figure out actually what it is or maybe find success with it? Well, joining me today is best-selling author Mastin Kipp, and we are talking about the concepts in his newest book that's actually releasing on the 12th but is already a bestseller on Amazon, Claim Your Power, a 40-day journey to dissolve the hidden blocks that keep you stuck and finally thrive in your life's unique purpose. Mastin is the best-selling author of the book Daily Love, Growing into Grace, and he's a speaker and life interventionist for people who are seeking rapid transformation in their lives. He's been featured on Oprah's Super Soul Sunday and also recognized as a thought leader for the next generation by Oprah Winfrey. And he's really built an international personal development company that focuses on creating rapid change and connecting people with who they really are and living their lives with passion and purpose. He also appears alongside Tony Robbins, Eckhart Tolle, Deepak Chopra, and so many others on Oprah's Super Soul 100 list. So please join me in welcoming Mastin today. Mastin, thank you for joining us, and congratulations on the brand new book.
Tammy, thank you so much. I'm thrilled to be here and really excited for our conversation. Really, really excited.
Yes. Absolutely. I am a fan of your work, and so I was excited to see you had the new book out, and I love it. And so I want to start off by saying that you actually say in the book that you kind of are viewing this book as Purpose 101, and that
yes.
abundance in all forms really comes from knowing what our purpose is and living out that purpose on a daily basis. And you say there's kind of two questions that we need to ask ourselves when it comes to purpose. Why am I here and what was I made for? So I want to start off by asking kind of where can people start on this when they're thinking about, you know, what their purpose is and kind of claiming their power? Where do you see everybody starting? Is it with those two questions?
Sure. It's a great question. I do want to say that, you know, in today's day and age, you know, there's a lot of political divide, economic divide, racial divide. There's a lot of xenophobia that's happening today. There's natural disasters that are like larger than we've ever seen. Like there's a lot that's going on in the world that seems to be outside of our control. So I think like where I would start with anybody, regardless of, you know, you're just getting started on this path and you're like, what's a personal growth book and what is this word purpose? Or if you've maybe been advanced for a period of time, but you're not quite where you want to go. Either way, you want to start with looking at where is your frame of reference for where your power, meaning your ability to create, your ability to bring forward, your ability to make manifest in the world what you see or desire or really what your purpose is, which we can talk about what that definition is in a second. But is that external or is it internal? Does Mercury not have to be in retrograde? Does Donald Trump not have to be the president? Does your mother have to forgive you before you can be happy? If all of the external things have to shift first, then your frame of reference is external. The goal is, regardless of who's president, whatever is happening externally, no matter what's happening externally, we have to start to look at where have you kind of given your power away? Who have you made larger than they should be? And why? And the answer is interesting when we look at why, which you can talk about. But the first place we always focus, whether it's a high performer who, you know, wants to go to the next level in their career, or it's like a stay-at-home mom who wants to start a business but she's scared that that'll disrupt the family, you know, everyone has something externally that they are blaming or focusing on or giving sort of reason for why they can't. So we got to actually start there, which is usually – it's actually counter to a lot of personal growth, because a lot of personal growth says, let's just go be great, have a vision board. I believe in vision. I believe in greatness. But I think what makes Claim Your Power unique and our process unique is we're primarily starting with the assumption that everything about you is awesome, who you are, your heart, your soul is enough. We just have to remove impediments. And once we remove those impediments, you're going to shine. And all those impediments typically result back into some type of fear of survival. So that's essentially the starting point, which is, where are you giving your power away? Who are you assigning more power than they deserve?
Okay. And is that the same for people? And we actually got a lot of questions from people saying, you know, I think I have found my purpose, but I'm not having success with it. So is that kind of all, or not having success with it yet, maybe? They're not getting the money. They're not, you know, moving forward as fast as they would want. So does that all come back to the same thing as well as kind of removing those barriers?
Yeah, when you start talking about purpose, there's a couple of different categories of folks. There's people who don't believe they have a purpose. There's people who thought they knew what their purpose was, but then they lost it. There's people who know what their purpose is, but they're not really getting the results that they want. And then there's people who think this is all malarkey.
Right.
Any of those, if you're in any of those categories, it's totally fine. If you think you know what your purpose is and you haven't quite gotten the result, you're probably living in what I call the 99% ready category. And it basically means that you have, like, if you're starting a business, you probably have your business name, you have your LLC set up, you probably know what you're going to be doing, you probably have a vision for what you want to create, but magically you haven't actually created your Facebook page yet, or magically you haven't hit send on your first email, or magically you haven't somehow told the world that you're a coach or whatever it might be. So that's like, those are the people who like are getting ready to get ready. So the reason why is because, again, there's an external factor, and it typically mostly the people that I work with are women, which is ironic, given that I'm a 6'5" white guy from Kansas who grew up in upper middle class neighborhood. It's very strange. I'm the most unlikely guy to do this work, for sure.
Right.
But, you know, with a lot of the women that I work with, it's usually if I play bigger, then I will disrupt the family, or if I play a bigger game and find my purpose, I won't be able to make money and I won't be able to take care of my family or my children. And it kind of all boils down to the fear of being seen on a certain level, which then below that boils down to, if I'm seen, if I'm vulnerable, if I'm going in this direction, then I'll die. And that's an irrational fear, which I call a survival pattern. Usually someone who's found their purpose but they're not going for it yet, or they haven't gotten the result, is because they haven't really committed. They're like 99% there, but 99% is exactly the same as zero. It's exactly the same.
Yes.
Because you're still not taking action. It's all in your head. Like, just because you follow an entrepreneur on social media doesn't make you one. Just because you watch someone else maybe on Instagram who goes to Bali doesn't mean you've been to Bali. Like, watching people and doing it are two totally different things.
Right, absolutely. Well, another concept that I've heard you talk about in the past and that you mention in this book as well is this concept of what you call divine storms. And
yes.
I love this because I think divine storms are usually what get people on a spiritual path to begin with. Because,
yes.
You know, if you ask people what started you, they're usually like, well, I got divorced, or well, so-and-so died, or well, I almost died, or, you know, whatever. So, How can these divine storms be a wake-up call to lead us to our purpose?
Sure. That's a great question, really relevant for today, especially considering that we're in the middle of Irma happening at the moment.
Yes.
So I think metaphorically, a divine storm is a moment in time where life, the universe, seems to be against you, God, herself. It seems to have a personal vendetta against you. Like, no matter what you do, things aren't moving forward. And it's a crisis in a sense. And I've had my own many, multiple ones. And you don't have just one. Like, you kind of always have these as you're elevating your life, but they tend to get better. The highs get higher, the lows get higher, that type of thing. And so the way that you start is that when things are not going the way you want them to, when things are going the opposite, when things are not going well, you have a choice to decide, is this happening to me or is this happening for me? And if you decide it's happening to you, then you really can't do anything about it. You're just a victim. Now, people here may have been victimized in the past, but nobody listening to the sound of my voice right now is a victim as their identity. If you start to decide that what's happening in life is happening for me, then you start changing the question around. Instead of asking, why did this happen to me, which is probably one of the worst questions you'll ever ask because no one ever comes up with a good answer to that question, right?
Right.
You start to ask, what's the lesson? What am I learning about following my intuition, about what I'm worth? What am I learning about setting boundaries? What am I learning about grief? What am I learning about, you know, how to own my worth or to be more vulnerable? And when you start to learn the lesson, the purpose of that crisis or that divine storm is to make conscious the survival patterns or the irrational fears that have been running you so that you can start to heal them, clear them, and go to the next level. So if things aren't going the way that you want, that is actually the first step towards living your purpose. It's a good thing. It's not a bad thing. It's all how you perceive it and interpret it.
Right, right. That's so true. And right in the beginning
just think about it. Like, if you want to change your life, things aren't going to go – like, if you want things to be different, then when there's a crisis, that's different. It's not how it used to be.
Right.
So start to see the crisis as a part of your prayer or as a part of your intention rather than the opposite.
Right. And that, and I always say that, you know, even if it looks chaotic and insane, there's usually a meaning that gets revealed. You just kind of have to wait it out and allow it to be revealed and trust that it's leading you somewhere.
That's right. Amen, sister.
Okay. So right in the beginning of the book, you actually say, like, so many of us are focused on goals or we're focused on achieving our dreams, but what we're not realizing is that until we go in and kind of get to the root cause of what is keeping us stuck where we are, we're really just going to be, you know, you say running in circles, you're not going to get anywhere. Can you share what you have found with working with people and all the work that you do? What is usually kind of keeping us stuck? Is it our thoughts, our emotions, past trauma, things like that?
Sure. It's a great question. And this is actually the core of why I wrote this book, because the world doesn't need another self-help book. It just is enough.
Right.
So I wanted to say, like, how can I write something meaningful that, like, really could be a really great companion that helps illuminate or, you know, bring some type of new information. And so the type of coaching that I do, I created it. It's called functional life coaching. And what I do is I help people discover the underlying root mental or emotional blocks that are holding them back. And why that's so important is because usually when people were in that crisis that we were just talking about, there was addiction, codependency, cheating, whatever it might be, divorce. There's lots of, like, trauma that we come from. And as we start to seek and grow, a lot of people just find better coping mechanisms. So instead of coping in a toxic relationship, you're coping with your green juice. Instead of coping as a drug addict, you're coping with your yoga practice. Instead of coping, drugs and alcohol, maybe you're coping with, workaholism. So a lot of times what I've noticed in my own personal journey was a lot of the tools and techniques I was given through therapy and spiritual practices were beneficial, but they were just better coping mechanisms. And what I started to realize after working with thousands of people was, like, yes, meditation is great. Green juice is great. Quinoa is great. Going gluten-free is great. An anti-inflammatory diet, all those things are fantastic. And without discovering the underlying emotional or mental blocks, then they're just better coping mechanisms. And it's like, we're not meant to just cope better. We're supposed to have a fruitful, joyful life, like life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness. It didn't say cope until you die, even if it's a better coping mechanism. So the Claim Your Power process and functional coaching helps people get down to that root cause of the mental and emotional blocks so that they don't have to just not cope anymore. They can dissolve those patterns. And while you still live with it because it's a part of your work, it's a part of your history, it's a part of who you are, it doesn't own you and you don't have to cope anymore. And you can use your story and your hurt and your pain to serve other people and not just keep this low-level anxiety that's right below the surface. You know, whenever someone gets diagnosed with, you know, bipolar disorder, ADD, all type of stuff, there's a lot of valid research to say, yes, that's the case. But I like to see psychiatrists and psychologists say, yeah, but what's the underlying trauma? What's the underlying root cause? What's the underlying limiting belief? Are you living your purpose? Because if you're in a soul-sucking job, of course you're going to be depressed. That's not something a pill can fix. You've got to look at your own internal stuff that's keeping you there. So the functional life coaching process is very pragmatic, and it aligns with every religious process, spiritual practice. It aligns with 12-step. It aligns with therapy. It's not against anything. It's a supplement and a camaraderie with those processes. And my hope is that it provides a tremendous amount of clarity. because there's a lot of confusion, I think, what terms mean in the personal growth space. And my goal is to bring clarity to where there's been confusion to very practical steps.
Right. So how do you work with someone, because I know the book, by the way, is kind of like this 40-day journey that where, you know, there's a new thing for people to do or to question. There's affirmations, and it's broken out day by day. So it really is almost like a coaching process. But
exactly.
How would you say, you know, how would you say you would work with people to start uncovering some of that trauma that might be keeping them stuck, that they probably don't, like you said, they're so busy coping and feeling better from the yoga and all this other stuff that they may not even realize that there are these underlying things that need to be cleared. So
how
would they start on that process?
Great question. And by the way, I want to also just be crystal clear. I do yoga. I drink green juice. I have an anti-inflammatory diet. Like, those things are great.
Yes.
But I'm also doing the mental and emotional work, which is the primary work.
Yes.
So, and the other thing is with trauma, you know, trauma, the definition of trauma is just simply a wound. That's all it is. And so it doesn't have to be some significant thing that happened in your childhood. It could be something that is seemingly insignificant, but it's still in there. So now I've worked with people who have experienced significant abuse. I've worked with people who have experienced what would seem to be insignificant abuse, but were very meaningful moments, usually earlier in life. Even sometimes a facial expression can be traumatizing in a certain sense, depending on who says it at what time. So, and the brain registers trauma the same regardless. So you don't want to start comparing, like, well, their trauma is better than mine or worse than mine, or I don't have big enough trauma. Like, that's just a bunch of nonsense. Everyone has wounding. Life is by itself wounding. You know, growing muscle, if you're a bodybuilder, bodybuilders grow muscle through micro trauma, which is like tearing the muscle apart and healing it. So when you look at the trauma, the hurt of your past, it's a part of the growing process. We got to give it a new interpretation. So to start, I have a 5-layer process which I lay out in Claim Your Power, which is sort of the core of functional life coaching. It's called the anatomy of transformation, and it goes from the most superficial down to the deepest depths of someone's internal process. And the most superficial layer is behavior. We can see it, we can hear it, we know what we're doing. So if there's a behavior in your life that you want to change, we start there. Do you down like a whole bottle of wine at 10 o'clock at night? Are you craving sugar? Are you not speaking up? Are you, playing small? Like, what are you doing? What's one behavior that you want to shift? Are you addicted to drugs or alcohol? Like, are you in a toxic relationship and you want to leave but you stay? We start there, and the process helps you understand very quickly why you do it with a lot of love and a lot of compassion, because everything is framed with the assumption that all the behaviors you have, even the ones that you want to change or the ones that are hurting you, are designed to help you survive. So from a survival perspective, the nervous system is doing the best it can to help you survive. However, with the Clean Your Power process, what we do is we help take your nervous system, and instead of making it your enemy, we help make it your ally. And we start with what's the behavior that you want to change. And from there, you tell me the behavior you want to change or what's stressing you in your life, I can trace it to your deepest trauma and help you realize, you know what, yeah, that happened, and we're not going to change what happened, but we can change how you relate to it, we can change your interpretation of it, and we can give it a different meaning. And from that place, everything starts to shift. And it's not a mental shift, it's an emotional shift, and that's the name of the game. We are scared to death of emotion, and it's not going to kill you. What kills you is not dealing with it long term.
Right. That's so true. And kind of along those lines, you lay out the what you call the head model and the heart model, and that the fact that what's keeping us stuck is that a lot of us are stuck in that head model. We need to move to the heart model. So can you explain the difference and how someone can know where they are?
Sure. And what I'm about to say is in honor of everyone who's come before me and all the work that's been done before me, because, you know, with every new generation, every new distinction, there's new information that's made available, there's new neuroscience that's been made available, even the last year or two, the field of epigenetics is expanding tremendously, like all of the quantified self stuff. We can look inside the body and see things now. We can map the brain. We can map the microbiome. There's so much that we can do now that we couldn't do before. So what I do is I hang out with a lot of forward-thinking doctors and biohackers and crazy people who, like me, who we obsess over this stuff. And I also work with people, and as soon as I have an idea, I work with my clients, and, you know, they're sort of like my guinea pigs, and they're cool with it, and I'm cool with it because they know what's up. And so what I discovered is that like a lot of the personal development material is like change your thinking, change your life, and there's this whole focus on thinking. But what's amazing is if you look at the actual research, what produces most thinking is the emotional sensations of the body, primarily negative ones. And so when you uncover and resolve the underlying emotion, the thoughts dissolve naturally. So if you have emotions you haven't dealt with and you go try to meditate at Vipassana meditation for 10 days, like you're going to have a really rough time.
Yeah,
and you're going to say, oh my gosh, I'm such a bad meditator. When really you just have underlying emotional blocks that you got to clear. Once you start clearing it, then what starts to happen is you have a somatic or emotional experience. So the head model is really sort of based on this idea that it's like personal growth is a mental model that you can just think your way into. And that works a little bit, but the problem is it's like willpower, like it runs out. And we're also battling your nervous system and your unconscious where all of this emotional data lives. So like there's no way that you're going to – this is why like you say to yourself an affirmation like I love myself, and like within a split second of even thinking the affirmation, like 99% of you says that's complete and total BS. So it's not that the affirmations are incorrect. Louise Hay's work is accurate. And the next level, now that we can understand the data, the emotional data in the body, is to say, hey, let's drop down into why you don't believe your affirmation instead
right.
of BSing yourself to say, yes, I do, to appear spiritual. Why don't you love yourself? What's the associated emotion with that issue? Where did that come from? How can we discover that? And then how can we start to see it in a new way? Because when we experience pain, the brain deletes, distorts, and generalizes. And, you know, a lot of the stuff that is holding people back is at least a year or more older. Sometimes it's decades or multiple decades older. And let me tell you something. If you go look at any crime scene investigator who's trying to recreate the scene of a crime and you interview like 10 different witnesses about something that happened 10 days ago, you're going to get 10 completely different interpretations of something that happened 10 days ago. You probably aren't recalling what happened in your childhood or earlier correctly. And so we got to understand that, you know, maybe there's some things you picked up along the way that don't serve you. Yesterday's medicine has become today's poison.
Yes, 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 yes. And another thing, well, you talk a lot about fear, and I've heard you say, you know, we can use fear as fuel rather than, you know, kind of allowing it to stop us. And in the book, you actually say that fear is a sign you are living on purpose, and that
yes.
courage is really what's going to help us move forward. So how does that kind of relate? Is that where like someone's living, you know, maybe they are living their purpose, but they're scared to death about, you know, doing something or moving forward? Is that actually a signal that maybe this is something they should go and do?
Sure. So the reason why I said this is because a lot of spiritual teachings talk about how fear is the opposite of love, or that fear is false evidence appearing real, or that there's no such thing as fear and love is all there is. The problem is that there's like different types of wisdom. There's like the higher spiritual wisdom, but then there's like that lower wisdom, which is like that practical everyday experience. So while we may be one consciousness experiencing itself subjectively and all there is love, I work with the Marine who was in Afghanistan, who was in multiple firefights. Like, you don't go tell that guy that fear is the opposite of love, or someone who's, you know, suffered abuse that fear is the opposite of love, or someone who's about to go on stage that this isn't real. Like, we have a nervous system. You have epinephrine. You have adrenaline. You have cortisol. You have a somatic experience in the body. Your soul, yeah, your soul is all love. But, like, what about your meat sack? What about your nervous system, this body that you're in? So it's not that I'm disagreeing with the assumption that we come from love. What I'm focusing on is this very human experience, because I don't really think your soul needs personal growth. I think your body, your mind, your nervous system, your neural pathways, your myelin, like all of these things are what we have to build, this machine of this body that we've been given. So if you look at anybody, I'm talking anybody, who is about to expand in the next level of their life, whether it's, you know, right now it's like, you know, it's the fall. So, you know, we got a lot of freshmen going to college, right? Or it's your first love, it's your first kiss, or it's the first time you go on Facebook Live, or like my first time on Super Soul Sunday, or the first time I ever talked to Oprah. Every single time you're scared. So how can it be that fear is the opposite of love if before every expansion that's a good expansion in your life, there's fear. It makes absolutely no sense because we have to understand that as we're stepping into our purpose and you're playing a bigger game, it's a more vulnerable process. You're going to be seen on a greater level. You're going to be taking risks. You're going to be, basically it's going to feel like you're betraying maybe family agreements that have been made over the years, what you should or shouldn't be doing. You're going to be breaking up with the tribe. All of those things produce fear. So there's necessary fear, which is if I'm in a burning building, right, or if I'm in the pathway of Hurricane Irma, like I have friends of mine that are leaving Florida and they're going to North Carolina and other places to get that, like that's a good thing. You want to make sure that, you have necessary survival fear. However, most fear that we feel is BS. It's a survival pattern. It's unconscious. It's irrational. And it's basically just the general fear of the unknown. And it manifests like procrastination, perfectionism, playing small, not telling the truth in relationships. I mean, for God's sake, we have to hire a therapist to tell the truth to our soulmate because we're so scared. Like, this makes no sense. So, like, right before anyone has a major expansion in their life, they're going to feel fear as well. So if you just think fear is the opposite of love, then you're not going to want to do that stuff because it's scary. So you're going to think, well, that's not what I'm supposed to do. So unless you're in mortal danger, fear is a compass, and fear actually increases as you start to live your purpose because you're doing things you've never done before. Your nervous system is scared of the unknown and uncertainty. It's a natural human response. And I primarily focus on helping people navigate those responses because I think the soul is going to take care of itself.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And you under the category of fear, you talk about what you call SPs or survival patterns. And kind of explain how, how they show up and give some examples. So can you share with everybody what these survival patterns are and how they're actually tripping us up?
Sure. Well, there's so many.
Yeah.
But
right,
typically, like the top few are procrastination, perfectionism, not playing playing small, not following your intuition, addiction. There's some new ones that are emerging because of technology. So distraction, technology addiction is a huge one. I also aha moment addiction, where it's like you just go from aha moment to aha moment, and you think that you're growing, but you're just actually having a bunch of insights, but you're not taking action on it. So you can be like, I want people to go from an aha moment to an aha life. That's the name of the game. So and like survival patterns are designed. They're unconscious, which is a fancy word for means that you don't know that you have them, or they're blind spots.
Right.
And it looks like what would be called like neurotic behavior, or like like not putting yourself out there. It looks like being frozen. And the reason why we do it is for a really kind and compassionate reason. Our nervous system thinks that if we keep this pattern up, then we'll stay alive. So that's a pretty good idea. But we got to start to question, is that entirely true? And the answer most of the time is absolutely not. So when you're procrastinating, you're trying to do something perfectly, you're doubting your intuition, you're playing small, you're distracting yourself, you have aha moment addiction, you really got to look at I'm really not actually taking any action here. I'm just sitting in my apartment, eating, cheese, drinking wine, reading books, and I'm not doing anything. There's a necessary cocoon time, but there's also a time in which you have to say, it's time to actually do this rather than just read about it. And, I'm really big on implementation. That's our big thing, is getting people to implement. I don't think the world needs any more information. I think that we need to implement the information we already have. And what gets in the way are those survival patterns. And another survival pattern is once you figure out what your survival patterns are, just talking about them a lot. Like, oh my God, I'm doing it again. Like, these patterns really big. Like, people do it. It's crazy. It's almost like saying, oh my gosh, I have an infection in my hand. Let me just keep talking about this infection in my hand instead of just like taking the medicine and making it go away. And you don't dwell on it. Like 10 years later, oh my God, that infection in my hand 10 years ago, you just let it go.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what we work with people to do, is to kind of, basically kind of get certain in uncertainty.
And is it these survival patterns that sort of stop people from taking action? Because I think sometimes people, you hear from them saying, well, I don't know what action to take, and how do I know what the right action is? And, I've interviewed so many different people on, on law of attraction and all that kind of stuff when they talk about taking action, and they say, just take action and you'll be led to the right one. But I think so many people are so afraid to take that first step. Is it these survival patterns that are stopping them?
Yeah, confusion is one of them, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is, if I asked you, I said, hey, could you please tell me where Higgs bosons come from and how they relate to gravity and what that has to do with weight loss. Like, you and I would probably both go, I don't know. But if I were to ask you, like, hey girl, like, what do you dream about doing? And you tell me, I don't know, that is complete and utter BS, because I know you got a Pinterest board about it, you follow people on Instagram who have it, you, like, totally get all the books about it, like, you read the blogs about it. So whenever someone says, I don't know, in context to this conversation, it's complete BS. Confusion is – because here's the thing. If you keep telling yourself you don't know, you'll hypnotize yourself and you'll believe you don't know. So one of my favorite questions to ask people who say they don't know is, well, I know you don't know, but if you did know, what would you say? And every single time the answer comes, because they do know.
Right.
So the assumption is that they have to know. And with the law of attraction, you know, the important thing to understand with the law of attraction is that, like, a lot of people will say, well, here's one I hear all the time. I just keep attracting emotionally unavailable guys, as if there's some magnet they can't control that brings them in. And the real truth is, no, you choose them. You choose it. You let it in, because you don't want to be with an emotionally available guy, because if you were, you'd have to open up and you'd have to be available too. So it's also an opportunity to look at, like, well, what's my side of it? And to take personal accountability and responsibility for your choices and not blame the stars, Mercury retrograde, or the universe for what you're choosing for yourself. You know, the law of attraction is absolutely real, but so is the law of choice. You know, you can choose not to let something in.
Right. Yeah, sure. Absolutely. And also when you're talking, because as I'm talking, we're getting some questions in. So when you're talking about identifying and finding these emotional blocks or these limiting beliefs or these traumas, and then you're talking about clearing them, are you talking about, like, EFT and different clearing methods, or what? How do you work with people to kind of clear them once they uncover what they are?
So there's a lot of, I would call them, sub-modalities that would be tools in the tool belt, right? So you got EFT, you got EMDR, neurofeedback, you got, there's Kundalini yoga, therapy. There's so many life coaching. Like, there's so many different things that they're like tools in your tool belt. And what I do is I look at what I do as, like, the centerpiece, and all those things around it are tools. Like this stuff would go, if you're a tapper, like, by the way, like, I remember, going to a tapping conference, and there was, like, this offer made for continuing support, and it was a scary offer for something. And there were all these people, like, in the hallway, like, tapping on it, like, should I do it? Like, it was really interesting and funny to see. It was really funny. But, like even though I'm scared of, you know, spending this much money, I love myself, and I believe in tapping. Like, I tap myself, and I think it's an important thing. But the problem is, with all the modalities, it's like, and this is the thing that I'm hoping will be the addition of this book to the conversation, is that a lot of people will say, well, you know what, if you can clear the emotion, it doesn't matter if you don't know where it came from. And I hear that as, I have no idea how to get you to a place where you know where that came from, and you can have a different association with it. Because I think of, like, tapping, Kundalini yoga, EMDR, all of these things, almost like really effective, like almost like if your nervous system is a pressure cooker, you can, like, open the top up a little bit and let some steam out, but unless you dissolve the root cause, it's going to keep steaming up and bubbling up, which is why you see, like, the archetypal, like, passive-aggressive yoga teacher who's, like, kind of spiritually sounding, but she's kind of mean, too. Like, I've seen a lot of that archetype, you know, in men and women in the yoga community, these people who are on the spiritual path, but they're still jerks, or they're still significantly stressed out, or they're still addicted to something. So, like, yes, tapping is great. Yes, EMDR is great. Yes, Kundalini yoga is great. But they just relieve the pressure temporarily until you get down and understand what's in there. And I would 100% disagree that we don't need to understand what our trauma was and where it came from. Because once you understand what it was, where it came from, and the interpretation you gave it, you can the adult in you will go, that makes no dang sense. Of course I don't believe that, but we have to look at it from adult eyes, because, you know, the truth is there's, like, probably a 3-year-old running your business right now, scared 3-year-old, or a scared 5-year-old running your relationship. Like, you can't just keep clearing the trauma because you're just relieving pressure. The goal is to neutralize the emotion, and the way that I do that is with the Finger Power Functional Process, where we get down to that root cause. So they all go together in a great tool belt. And once you understand what the root cause is, and once you understand why it was there, the choice that you made, and you get triggered again, you can, A, consciously say, you know what, you can actually speak that part of yourself and give yourself the assurance that you need, and then use EFT or yoga or EMDR as additional tools to calm the nervous system down, because that's what they do.
Yeah.
But what I do is I see that stuff as more like sutures, and I do surgery.
Right. No, it's true. Because I think I've noticed in my own life too, when I start realizing what's underneath things, or I start realizing why, if I'm reacting a certain way and I have no idea why I'm reacting that way, and then I start going deeper, just the knowledge of going, oh my God, now I know why I'm doing that, like relieves some of the pressure. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so I also wanted to – so by the way, this book and all the exercises in it, this is exactly basically what you're walking people through, is kind of getting deeper. Yep. and digging into their own lives. So the book itself and the 40 days is broken into four parts. So you have it's called Separation, Initiation, Ordeal, and then the Journey Home. So can you just explain to people kind of what these four parts are and what is this journey that you're taking them on?
Sure. So this process is not something I just like sat around and made up out of nowhere. I was raised by a biologist. I'm learned in the scientific method. And so I've been working with people for a decade in retreats, coaching programs, online courses. I have a lot of data, like a ton of data, and proximity and results. Like, we have clients that have gone from welfare to $50,000 months in 9 months because of this process. So we've had people that their marriage and family therapist said, you guys should get a divorce. And we went through this process. Not only did they not get a divorce, they got recommitted, and now there's a child alive because of it. So there's lots of real results from literally thousands of our clients where I can back this type of stuff up. But the basic idea, so what I did was I said, well, typically I would do this in a 7 to 11 day retreat. 12 hours a day. Like, that's my favorite way to do it. But I was like, well, that's not sustainable. I can't do that for everybody. So I was like, and because it's such an intense process and every day is extremely profound, I wanted to space it out so that people could have some revelations through this process. So it's a coaching process spaced out over 40 days. You can come to one of our retreats and do it in 11 or 7, but that's super intense, and that's not, most people aren't going to ever do that. So I wanted to create something that could scale, that could reach more people, I could partner. I'm working with different prison companies that could help us give it to their prisoners and stuff like that, and different victims of abuse and stuff like that. Because I want this stuff to be the go-to book for anyone who's experiencing trauma to help them come, bounce back. So it's really tested with the data and the results. And so the real idea here is that the 40-day process is it's a journey, right? And so who is the person who codified the process of the journey as a system? His name is Joseph Campbell, and he wrote The Hero with a Thousand Faces, and that's a book that that talks about the hero's journey. George Lucas used it to create Star Wars, and every screenwriter in the world uses it now to make films and stuff like that. And it's a way that the human being can read a story and understand the beginning, a middle, and an end. And what's amazing is that it also correlates to our psychology, because, when you look at stories are just sort of fictional versions of what we experience in our own life. So I modeled the process after the hero's journey in those four different phases, because it's universal, it's understandable, everyone understands it, we watch the media from it, we experience it in our lives. So it's a cycle that we all are familiar with, and I put it in the context of 40 days because – A, that's enough time to actually change the habits, and B, there's a sort of a spiritual significance. Jesus was in the desert for 40 days and 40 nights. So it's all very archetypal. It's very much modeled after the hero's journey. It's modeled after, thousands of years of storytelling, so that someone can have an experience and understand that, I'm familiar with this process because I didn't want to reinvent the wheel.
Right, sure. And also, and I think you mentioned this, that kind of transformational ladder that you bring people on, which kind of starts with the initial trauma, and then it goes to the level of belief that's being caused by that trauma, and then the emotions or the story that we're telling ourselves, and then you really start with that behavior. So can you, I know you talked briefly about it, but can you kind of walk people through what that is? Because that's also really where, you're also bringing them through that transformational process.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, this is the framework for functional coaching, for functional life coaching. We start at your behavior, right? So I'm just going to make something up arbitrarily. Every night at 8 p.m., you want to stuff your face with pizza. It's like, okay, cool. That's the behavior you want to do. So it's like, well, what's the story you're telling yourself, which is the next layer down? Well, I deserve it. It's been a hard day, right? And a lot of people, and that's like stories and thoughts, and that's how you describe your circumstances or your conditions. A lot of people would say, change the story, change your life. Problem is, there's deeper layers that we're discovering that produce the story. But if you're at the end of a long day, maybe, or maybe it's wine, or maybe it's sugar, or whatever it is, you tell yourself, you deserve it, you have a long day. Well, where does that story come from? Well, that story is produced by the sensations and the emotions of the body. And you might be feeling tired, you might be feeling anxious, you might be feeling stressed out. So you're feeling tired, you're feeling stressed, you tell yourself you deserve it, it's been a long day. That manifests as drinking the wine, eating the sugar, downing the pizza, whatever it might be. However, where does emotion come from? So emotion, we now know, comes from meaning or the interpretation of past events. So if something happened in the past and I gave it a certain interpretation or meaning, that then produces the emotion of anxiety, the emotion of fear, the emotion of shame, whatever it might be, which produces the story that I'm tired and I deserve it, which produces the behavior of drinking the wine or the pizza. And the thing is, when we eat that food or whatever the behavior that you want to change is, typically it's a low-level coping mechanism to keep that emotion at bay. The problem is, that's a really, really bad idea because you can't suppress your emotions long-term. They will rear their hair in your life. So then you have to ask yourself, well, below the emotion, if there's a belief, what's the belief? And once you discover the belief, you got to understand, well, where did this thing come from in the first place? What happened to me where I decided this happened? And typically it's like, you know, my father was 10 minutes late picking me up from school, or I had experienced some trauma or abuse as a child, or I was the last one picked, or, you know, there's a million different moments that someone can happen. And sometimes it's significant, sometimes it's very insignificant, but something happens at a younger age. We make it mean something, which produces a feeling that we don't want to feel, which produces a story that we use to cover up the emotion, which produces the behavior that we want to change. So that's sort of like functional coaching in a nutshell. But that's what I help people do, is really figure out what are those beliefs, what are those stories, what are those behaviors, and like we question the interpretation of the event. Like, is it really true? And do you want to know how you can get someone to change who doesn't want to change? You want to know the secret is?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The secret is you got to find leverage. So we had a client once who did not want to start a business. Well, she did, but she was scared. And when she realized that by not starting her business, she was letting the people who hurt her win, because the only reason she wouldn't start the business is because she was afraid of the past trauma that had happened to her. And not only was she letting them win, by her not starting a business, she was also preventing her earning ability for her to actually take care of her family. And so not only were they beating her, they were actually still influencing her children. And when she figured that out, game over. And so that's what I help people do, is to realize, like, maybe that's not the best decision, and to see it in a new way.
Yes, yes. And actually, along those lines, one of the exercises that that kind of grabbed me that I wanted to mention here is on day 10, you actually have an exercise where you have people kind of sit down and look at all the different areas of their lives. So it might be finance or health or romance or whatever, and to kind of write down the worst case scenario of each area if they changed absolutely nothing in their life.
Yes.
You know, where would they be? And then ask themselves, like, is this the life that I want? And I love that.
Totally.
Because it's such an eye opener, like, oh my God, wait a minute, I don't want this, and I actually have the power to change this. So, like, I just love that exercise. I think everybody should do that.
That means a lot. Well, yeah, me too. I agree. And it's awesome, because that's some of the first feedback that I'm getting. But I like to be very pragmatic with people and say, listen, like, it's entirely possible for you to change your life, and it's also entirely possible for you to not change your life. And if you don't, what would happen? And typically the answer to that question gives people enough emotional charge to say, you know what, I know I'm scared, but that is way more scary than whatever I'm scared of. I don't want that.
Exactly.
Everything in this book is designed to gently manipulate people to move towards what they want, and manipulate in a positive sense. You know, that's my goal.
Yeah. Right. No, absolutely. And I just want to share, we got – a comment from Patricia in Memphis, who just said that she wants to say that Mastin gives very practical advice and has a unique understanding of how to assist people. He doesn't have a Pollyanna perspective and realizes that people need more than happy adages to help them correct challenges. He looks forward to your messages, especially your prayers, the heart meditation, always brings out emotions, and she's basically just saying that you're a blessing to many. So I just wanted to share that with you.
Thank you so much. It made me cry.
Okay, so another question that we actually got from, it looks like John in Tennessee, is asking, okay, so what he's asking, it seems like, is will going through these 40 days, do you have to focus on one area of your life, or will this work for multiple areas? Like, I guess what
Great
he's
question.
Saying is, do I have to pick one area and go through the whole book, or can I work on multiple things at a time?
Great question. Sounds like John needs to learn some patience. I love you, John. In all seriousness, so I'm going to say something that's going to sound like a really big claim, but I'm going to tell you why it's true. So when you go through this book, you can focus just on one area, but it will change every area of your life. It will improve your financial life. It will improve your mental health. It will improve your physical health. It will improve your relationships. It will improve every area of your life, and here's why. When you change one area of your life, you are changing. The patterns in you are changing, and you have you're the one thing in common with every area of your life. So what happens is whenever you improve one area of your life, your other areas automatically improve. If you get in better shape, you're going to have a better relationship. If you have a better relationship, you're going to have, you know, more pep in your step to, you know, get out there and serve. If you're, you know, having a hard time in business, and you start to crush it, well, then maybe you're going to get inspired to go out there and, you know, get in shape. So as you start to improve one area of your life, you improve. Therefore, every area of your life starts to improve. So it's not some magic bullet. It just helps you get better. And typically the way that you, the area that you want to, where you're the most stuck, the lessons that you need to learn in those areas also apply to the other areas of your life. And so even though it might seem like you're working on one area, when you're changing around and, you know, reconstructing beliefs and emotions and stories, that has a universal effect. So it does impact every area of your life. And I would urge John to start with the one area he wants to avoid the most, because that's where the most work will be for him, for sure.
Right. Oh, my gosh. Okay. Another exercise that I wanted to just point out that I thought was really cool was I forget what day it was, but it was having people think, and I think this is related to finding their purpose, but having people think about kind of the happiest memories they have from things in the past in order to uncover what you call their emotional blueprint. It's a longer exercise, but I remember reading through it and think, oh my gosh, I want to do that. I mean, I already feel like I know my purpose, but I still want to do this. So the question is, why is this important, and how does that relate to maybe somebody who's still trying to figure out what they should be doing in this life?
Sure. So a couple things. Carolyn Mace once told me, when I told her I didn't know what my purpose was, which is ironic because the guy who teaches purpose didn't know his purpose, which is, you know, we come to teach what we need to learn, right? She told me point blank, like, Mastin, you're not going to know what your purpose is every 10 years or so. Like, it's going to be something that always changes. So that's why this book is, like, kind of evergreen, where it's something that I think, you know, it should be done like a physical. Like, it's something that should be consistent because it does change. I would say it doesn't change. It just gets refined. How I would describe it. But that exercise that you're talking about, you know, life is an emotional game. We set goals to feel feelings. You get the money because you want the freedom and the security, or you want to lose the weight because you want to have more self-respect when you look in the mirror. You want to get a relationship so you can feel intimacy and connection. Like, we set goals to feel emotion. The problem is we don't know this. We think we want the stuff, but most people set the goal, get the stuff, and are happy for a second, but then they're not happy anymore. So we have to start to go for the real target, which is the emotional target. So that day helps you get crystal clear on what are the emotions that you actually want to feel. And guess what? There is a blueprint because you felt them throughout your life, and there are happy memories and happy moments in your life that you can go back and deconstruct and start to go, huh, did you realize I had these like two or three emotions they were consistent in every single memory. Maybe this wasn't the good old days. Maybe I don't need to be nostalgic. Maybe this wasn't back then. Maybe that's data that I can use to become more self-aware and then start to design a life with more of those emotional states in them, and at the same time dissolve the fear and the survival patterns that have prevented me from experiencing those emotions, because our nervous system is designed to help us avoid pain more than it is designed to help us seek pleasure, because pleasurable emotions are vulnerable emotions, and vulnerability can equate to death in the nervous system. So on a certain sense, what I'm saying is your nervous system doesn't want you to live your purpose because it's going to seem vulnerable and scary, because you're going to have a lot of data about why you can't. And so what you got to do is figure out what were those happy memories, what were those emotions, and then the work is bringing that to life and recognizing that it's up to you to generate it and to not wait around for Mercury to go direct before you can start, you know, living your purpose.
Right, yeah, absolutely. That's so funny. Okay, so before we end, I just want to ask, you know, in this, going through this process and kind of unearthing and finding these traumas, clearing these traumas, and allowing ourselves to become freer and more passionate and kind of finding our power, what would you say the result is, or the results that you've seen from people following this process? What are you hoping that people will get to at the end of those 40 days?
Sure. Well, I'll start really big, and then I'll get really practical. So, like, my mission in life, I call it like a moonshot, like something that's so big it may not happen in my lifetime, but I want to go for it because maybe I can advance this work enough where someone else can take it to the next level. But my moonshot in my lifetime is I want to end trauma in my lifetime. Some people want to end cancer. I want to end trauma because I think trauma is the root cause of all the dysfunction that we're seeing in the world today. So globally, if we end trauma, that's by definition called heaven on earth. Okay. In your life, it helps you to create the life that you want. So the results are purely subjective, meaning they're going to be individual for each person. But like I said, we've seen people have significant financial increase. We've seen people have significant relational changes. We've seen people lose weight. I mean, so whatever it is that you want to create or manifest in your life, this is a process that will help you get there and just be more of who you already are. There's nothing to change. There's nothing to fix. I actually don't think anybody needs to be fixed. I think we just have to change a pattern or two, from a survival pattern to a pattern of purpose. And so ultimately, it's going to help you be in the greatest expression of your life, whatever that might mean for you. If you're financially minded, then, yeah, you can earn a ton of money. Like, we got people in there doing millions of dollars in revenue because they're clearing this stuff. If you're relational minded, this will help you have a really amazing family that you don't blame for why you don't have all the things that you want, and actually have a good experience where your friends can be your family too. It can help you lose weight because, you know, a lot of times there's that fear of being seen, or there's that like craving for sugar and stuff like that because, you know, you're trying to fill up that emotional need. So it can definitely help you get to wherever you're going. And it's not just an airy-fairy book. Like, it's very practical. We have business people that work on this. We have professionals. This has been covered in Forbes and Inc. magazine as well. I'm very spiritually minded, but it's also very practical. It's not a miracle book. There's no, like, miracle here. It's just very pragmatic understanding of how the human nervous system, psychology, and emotional processes work, and how you can use that to become more in your own life and to create whatever it is that you want to create.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I saw somewhere, I think it was in the book, that you're – so anyone who purchases the book, you also have, like, a free companion training they can sign up for. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah, because the last thing I want is just to be self-help. You know, where it's like, oh, I read the title. Cool. I claim my power. Like, I want people to, like, actually do it. So I put together a free 40-day course. If you go to cleanyourpowerbook.com/40, that should be up on September 12th. So we're a little early on that. But it does launch September 12th, cleanyourpowerbook.com/40. And it's basically a series of trainings I put together to help you actually implement this stuff and understand it, rather than just have it be self-help. Because, like I said, this is not a self-help book. This is an implementation guide to bringing your purpose to life. And so I wanted to bring my A game to help people implement. And, you know, the other thing is, like, I always wanted like the author's perspective on a book. So like I always thought like wouldn't it be cool if I could like go through a book with the author? So that's exactly what this is, and it's on the house. There's no fee for that. It's a free gift
right.
When you grab the book.
Yeah, yeah, and honestly, I feel like it's a self-help book, but I almost feel like it's a self-help workbook. You know what I mean? Because there's
totally.
It's really. Yeah, it's like really walking people through, and there's questions, and there's affirmations, and then there's a different prayer that you offer every day. So, so really, it's this workbook that you're using to take yourself on this journey. That's kind of sort of how I viewed it when I looked at it.
100%. That's right. Yeah, I mean, I can't coach everybody in the world, but I can write this book and get it out there and help people implement. That's my number one thing. Implement, guys. That's the name of the game.
Mm-hmm. Right, absolutely, taking the action. Well, thank you so much for joining us today and for all the work that you do. And I always look forward to more of your teachings, and I will definitely continue sharing them with my audience.
Gosh, that means the world to me. This has been so much fun and such an honor. And, you know, this is the first real feedback I've gotten from the book. So it just warms
good.
My heart to hear this, too. So thank you so much. Like, I'm just so, so honored.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Mastin. I appreciate it. And thank you to everyone who participated and sent in questions. There will be a replay because I know you guys are always asking about that. So stay tuned to your email for that. Thank you for joining us, and I will see you next time.